Boys and girls, ladies and gents, welcome to another episode of Clutch Conversations. It's your boy Mike. We back at you one more again, live on a Thursday night. Man, I hope everybody's doing well. Really looking forward to the show. We're going overseas with it tonight, but we'll get to the show in just a second. First and foremost, shout out to my lovely wife, Takara. Really appreciate everything you do. Appreciate you holding your boy down. Y'all make sure y'all show some love in the comments too. And make sure you show the channel some love as well while you're at it. Make sure you hit that like button, hit that subscribe button, and Hulk smash that notification bell so you can get notifications each and every time we drop a video here on the channel. Shout out to the audio only gang. Audio only episodes of Clutch Conversations are available on all major podcasting platforms. That's Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and more. So make sure you go out there and check us out. And when you're checking us out on your favorite podcasting platform, please be sure to follow, rate, and review. We really appreciate the love. We really appreciate the support. Speaking of support, if you're involved in this reptile hobby in any shape, form, or fashion, make sure you're out there supporting US Arc and US Arc Florida. The link for both organizations are in the description of this video. Definitely go get your membership if you can. If you can drop a donation, and definitely spread the word about both these organizations that help protect our rights as reptile keepers. And while you're out there spreading the word, make sure you spread the word about our sponsors. We're going to kick this first sponsor video, and we'll be right back.
Big dreams start in small towns. Small Town Exotics is a family-run business that specializes in high-quality ball python morphs, western hognoses, and select leopard geckos. They are proud members of US Arc, US Arc Florida, and the Orient Society. Stay connected with Small Town Exotics on YouTube, Instagram, and Facebook. Witness their journey as they grow their business and showcase their animals to the world. Thank you, Small Town Exotics, for sponsoring the show.
Art comes in many forms. At Armies Angels, it comes to life.
Shout out to the sponsors and shout out to the chat, man. The chat is jumping tonight. Let's see who we got in the building. We got the homie Brian, Heathen Hatcher 352 in the building. What's good, homie? Appreciate you coming out. Eric's Morph Factory in the building. What's good, homie? Appreciate you coming out. Arvin, Game of Odds, what's good? Homie, appreciate you coming out. Appreciate the support. We got the homie Frank from Locked and Loaded Ball Pythons. Appreciate you coming out, man. This dude right here got a killer collection. Y'all make sure y'all check him out. Make sure y'all go follow him, man. He got some crazy stuff. The big homie, Emilio, what's good? Homie, V-Unit General in the building, what's good? Shout out to the V-Unit crew. Got the homie Jesus in the building, Rising Sun Service. Y'all make sure y'all get some of that sticker merch from your homie. Appreciate you coming out, dog. Calvi Coughs, what's good? Appreciate you coming out. If it's your first time coming through, make sure you hit that subscribe button and Hulk smash that notification bell. Mission Morphs in the building. What's good, homie? Appreciate you coming out. The big homie, Roll 5.0 in the building. What's good, man? Y'all make sure y'all check the homie out, too. He did his thing on the IG Live today, just showing how you do things. Y'all make sure y'all go check him out. Blakers Pythons in the building. What's good, homie? Appreciate you coming out. Appreciate the support. See who else we got. The homie, Big Ed in the building. What's good, homie? Appreciate the love. Appreciate the support. Jessica, what's good? Appreciate you coming out. Denmark's Den, appreciate you. See who else we got. Don't want to miss nobody. Volcanic Constrictors, what's good, homie? Appreciate you coming out. Appreciate you coming out. Got the homie Wiz in the building. We're going to stop it right there again this week. Hey, man, the homie Wiz got something big for y'all next week. Stick around to the end of the show. I might just let a little bit of the information out. So y'all make sure y'all check that out. Appreciate you coming out, homie. Appreciate the support. We're going to kick this intro video, then we'll be right back.
Won't you listen to me? I got that flavor. I know you're dying to feed. I ain't no dancer. Just got some hip in my feet. Now throw your hands up. Ooh, you bring the lighter. I got the fuse. You make a fire. I'll add the fuel. Follow my lead. Just watch the shoes. Gotta turn the heat up.
Episode 105, Prague Morphs. What's good, homie?
How's it going? How am I not supposed to be nervous after that long intro?
No pressure, man. I really appreciate you staying up to 2 a.m. your time to do the show live, man. It means a lot.
Thanks. I actually took a little nap, so I'm still waking up, but I think I'll be good for a few hours.
Nice. So real quick, for those who may not know you, introduce yourself, brother.
So my name is Devin. I'm originally from Las Vegas. Me and my fiance started all of this together. And here we are. I guess we'll slowly go more through the questions so I don't just ramble.
All right. So tell us how you ended up in Prague from Las Vegas.
So when I was in high school, we had a foreign exchange student from Czech Republic, and that's kind of how it started. And then my parents started sending me out here in the summers, kind of like get away from me. And when I was younger, I didn't like it very much. And as I got older, I started realizing that it was a pretty cool place. So I didn't really have much going for me that much in Vegas. And I was able to get a visa based on my foreign exchange family. So I ended up coming out here 7 years ago. And I haven't looked back since.
So that sounds really dope. That sounds really dope. How many years did you do that, like, over the summer?
I think I started coming out here when I was like 14, and I moved here when I was 7 years ago, so like at 25. So I guess like it wasn't every summer, but I've been here maybe 6 or 7 times before I had moved here. I always came and visited the like foreign exchange family. Like I didn't study in Prague, but he came and lived with me he was a senior and I was a freshman in high school, and he was there for the whole year.
Gotcha. And so what was it about that area that made you want to just pack everything up and move, other than
as I said, when I was younger, I didn't like it very much, but I guess as I got a bit older and got more social and started going out and everything, Prague's a bit of like an underground type city. It's not the, like, people here don't make the most amount of money, so everything's not this like huge fancy thing. You have a lot of these like little underground pubs and bars and stuff. So I started making some friends. The quality of life here just seemed better, and it seemed like an opportunity too good to miss, because if I didn't have my foreign exchange family, I wouldn't have been able to get the visa. So I just looked back on it and said, screw it. And I knew that once I came out here, I would give it some time. I didn't want to like come out here for a year and then go home too early or anything. So once I was here, I was just kind of set. And within even a year of being here, I have more friends, and my whole life just kind of shifted here. So
nice. If you had to point to like two or three things that's like culturally different between there and the States, like what are some of the biggest things you notice?
Oh, man. Well, you know, my Czech friends always joke that when we go to restaurants, you know, all the waiters are like, hey, everybody, how are you doing? And here it's a bit more stern and direct. Maybe the service industry isn't as good here, but Czech people stick to themselves a bit more. You know, their culture has been up and down and all kinds of crazy stuff, communists and everything. Back in the day. So that's kind of the big cultural difference. It's not a total Eastern European country, but it's also not so Western also. So you kind of have a bit of both worlds. Food's much different. You know, everything's kind of Czech, if you know what I mean. Like foreign foods and things could be a bit tailored towards the Czech market. I kind of miss some foods from back home, but other than that, I love it out here.
What food are you missing the most?
I mean, I know it's not American food, but I miss like good Japanese food and good Chinese food. The number one immigrant out here are Vietnamese people, so all the Asian food is kind of dominated by them. So when you go to like a Chinese place, they have like a Vietnamese menu and some Chinese stuff. So the sushi game's not so good out here, and I miss ramen for sure too.
Nice. So how'd you get into ball pythons?
So my fiance and I, well, at the time she wasn't my fiance, we lived in a one-bedroom apartment in Prague, and I used to watch a lot of venomous videos back in the day, like Viper Keeper, for example. So I always had a bit of an interest in snakes, but I had never really acted on it. So when it came time to get maybe like a pet or something for the apartment, we had this crazy idea sitting on the couch that we'd get a ball python. And in my head, I thought it would be like in this big fancy terrarium in my living room, and I'd have this fancy snake. So when we first started, we ordered a terrarium from a German company, and like the breeder that I was buying from at the time was supposed to come in 2 weeks. So the terrarium never showed. Well, the terrarium showed up late, but it wasn't going to be here in time for the handover. So I ordered another one, and then they both showed up at the same time. So when I joked around with the breeder, like, hey, man, I have two terrariums. What do you recommend? And he was like, oh, man, you definitely need a female for the male, because we had bought a fire butter spot nose head clown just based on, like, the website scrolling. Oh, this one looks cool. Click. And the guy's like, man, I got a leopard pastel 66 head clown. You can make butter Batmans with it. And that was the start of it, man. It put me down the rabbit hole of the morph calculator, and it just snowballed from there, man. Total 100%.
So you picked up those first two. So how long was it after you picked up those first two did you start like picking up more?
Oh man, I think it took me a good 3 weeks to learn how to feed the snake, you know. As we all know, the breeder told me like wait a week, and it just didn't make much sense in my head. So I think after 3 weeks of trial and error and learning how to set them up, and man, it took me forever to figure out like the system of how a thermostat works, you know, like putting the sensor on the heat mat into the sensor and that into the wall. So once I kind of figured it out a bit and we had discovered Morph Market, I was just scrolling and clicking. And I think I was like a month after when we had ordered our next two snakes. So within a month, I think we had already ordered, we had already had our second purchase from someone.
Okay. And what were those purchases?
It was actually a pack. I think it was a Firefly OD Hypo and an unknown line of Xanthic that I had never even heard of at the time. The guy had some weird pairing, like a special to a Mojave, and an Xanthic popped out. So he didn't know what line it was, and I still didn't understand it. So I think that was the purchase. And then from that same guy, like, maybe he's actually Salter and Serpentine on Instagram, a small German guy, a good friend of mine. And I think later he ended up selling me an adult just to give me a little bit of maybe experience, because the females that we had were, I think, like 600 or 700 grams at the time. And he's like, oh, if you take this adult in a year, maybe you can make something. And I think he almost gave it to me for free. It was like a pastel OD het hypo male. And it was like my first adult. My fiance has the video of us taking it out of the bag. And I'm just jaw on the floor, you know. Could never seen a snake so big in my life. It was a male, so.
Were you scared of the snakes at first, any, or were you?
Cool with you know, I don't think I was necessarily scared, but there's kind of like, if you've never dealt with them, regardless of you being scared, like when we first brought the snakes home and they were in the brap blast, I remember like when I touched them, I kind of jumped because I wasn't sure what to expect. So it went fast, but even like if I was cleaning tubs and the big snake would hiss at me, it would get my heart running, you know? But then I don't really remember the period from that to where I am now. So it had to have changed really, really fast.
Yeah, that's usually how it works, or at least that's how it worked for me. Like, I ain't gonna lie, like at first, when I first held a snake, like I really didn't know what to expect. Like I had in my head that it would feel like a certain way, but it felt totally different.
Totally different,
like,
right?
Yeah, like I remember holding the snake and like feeling like the muscles move and all that stuff. And that was just kind of fascinating. And at first I was a little bit like scared, ain't gonna lie. Like I was just not even scared, I should say, but just more
uncomfortable,
like hesitant, like not knowing what to expect. Like when it would hiss, like I would definitely be on high alert, like you said, like you were with the adult when it hissed and stuff like that. And I remember like having this thing in my head where I didn't want to get bit. Like, even though I'd heard people tell me like, hey, it doesn't hurt when a ball python bites you, like still in my mind, like it was going to be like the super painful thing. And when it finally happened, it wasn't painful at all. So it's funny.
Man, my fiance got bit before I did, and I was like jealous. Yeah.
Did it draw blood?
No, I don't even think he opened his mouth. I think he just kind of like slapped her a bit, like a bit of a warning strike, because he was in a little tub and he didn't have a lot of cover. And I don't think we really understood that you shouldn't be flailing your hands in front of him. And when she got bit, she lost all fear instantly. And I still had a little bit of it. I don't even remember my first bite, man. I think it was still like a month or two after that.
Gotcha. I remember we picked up a lesser leopard clown, and like she was cool at first. And then one day, like, we were holding her on the bed, and like she just freaked out, and like she was like striking and striking and striking. And that was the first time like we had seen like a snake like freak out like that. So crazy. Like, yeah, that was pretty funny. Like, had to get the hook and like grab her. Like, right now I know like it's ways you can get around it, not and whatnot. Yeah. But like back then it was just like, yeah, just take whatever precautions necessary.
Yeah, now even like one of my fiance's friends was here and was joking that I like hold the snakes like they're bagels, you know, because like I'm not so scared of them anymore, and it doesn't really matter what's happening. I can just pick them up, put them down. If they strike, it's almost like cute now, right?
So when you were picking up those first ones, were you fully committed to breeding at that point, or were you still kind of on the fence about it?
I'm trying to think of when the breeding thing started to get a bit more serious. So my fiance studied genetics a bit in school. So she kind of taught me one day of how everything worked. And there was a moment when the light bulb kind of went off in my head of like understanding how to make purchases to avoid 66% hets. Like, instead of buying like 1.1 clown head DG, you can buy a clown head DG and a DG head clown. And then the worst case scenario, you have double hets, right? So I think that it was maybe... I don't think it was maybe until we had met another big breeder. We have a friend out here. His name is Martin. They're Bohemia Balls, I think. He was one of the first guys that allowed us to come over to his facility. And going down there, I think, was a big eye-opener for me, that I knew it was something that I could do. Standing in his hatchling room, at the time, I think he had clear tubs, so you could see all the babies. And it just, the energy of standing in that room and all the animals there was one of the most unique things I had ever done. So he was one of the first guys that we saw that had a decent list of females for sale, just like leopard head clowns and butter head clowns. So even though I maybe wasn't 100% positive of what I wanted to do or the direction that I wanted to go, I kind of started realizing that I needed to build this base. So when he posted his list for sale, I think we had reserved 7 or 8 animals. And then we drove down there. He's 2 hours south. We'll get into that later. And I think we left with 25 females. He had so much stuff for sale. He started showing us, you know, he had like pastel leopard head clowns. And I think he even had a few, like an Enchi clown or something. So he didn't sell us holdbacks, but he was definitely, you know, being a bit more gracious of what he would give us. So that was kind of the start of it. And that's when I knew like, okay, this is gonna get a bit out of hand, because that was like the big jump from us going from like 10 snakes to 50 snakes overnight. And we were still waiting for a rack at the time, and we had everything in these IKEA tubs that were on the floor. And at one point, our whole bedroom was just like, you couldn't even walk in it because it was just all snakes.
Yeah, I was going to ask you infrastructure wise, did y'all have like the rack space at the time if y'all were set up for it? But
well, I have a funny picture on my phone. Remind me, I'll try to find it for you later.
All right.
So we had like a 1 or 2 bedroom apartment, I guess you'd say, and kind of with like the living room as one room. And in our room, we had like a bed here. And then on both sides, we had an FB40 rack. So there was like one FB40, one FB40, which weren't filled yet, because this was, I thought that we weren't going to move from there. So I wanted to plan for the future, and it was a bit cheaper if you bought more racks. So we had bought 2 FB40 racks and 1 FB10 rack. And the FB10 rack was at like not the foot of our bed, but across from it, like kind of where your TV would be. Mm-hmm. And that was, I think it only lasted for like a month before we started realizing that it was time to actually get a place for this.
Okay. And so when you say you got to get a place, y'all got like a facility?
So what I'm sitting in right now, initially we moved to a 4-bedroom townhouse. Mm-hmm. And the big thing for us was making sure that the landlord was on board, because our last place, the landlord didn't know. And there was a bit of a scary situation once where he was coming to show his dad the new apartment. I had everything hidden in the bedroom. And they looked at everything and they skipped the bedroom, thankfully. So I had my fiance call a bunch of landlords and just be like, hey, this is what we do. We're serious. We kind of buttered it up a bit and lied that we had been into it a bit longer because we didn't want to tell the guy we were 6 months into it. And from the five that we called, I think like four of them or three of them said yes right away. And one of them said maybe. So we came down here to look while we were still renting the other place. And every room had air conditioning, which is really rare in Czech Republic. It was like it owned gated parking lot. It was brand new. It's only about 1,200 square feet, but it had four bedrooms. So we had planned on having two snake rooms there and living there as well. And that lasted for about 6 months. And now we rent next door also. So right now we have two four-bedroom townhouses. The middle one is our snake facility. And what I'm sitting in now is what we live in.
Okay. And then I think I heard you say somewhere else that things like went very fast, like as far as like building stuff, and you've shared some of that now, like you picked up like the 25 snakes at one time. So yeah. How fast was the build from there?
Well, I used to be a professional poker player, so I had a decent amount of cash sitting around.
Okay.
I knew that wasn't something I wanted to do forever. So once I had met my friend Martin, the guy I was talking about that we bought like the 40 females from, We talked a little bit. He was doing it mostly for fun. He has a job, but he was still doing decent with it. So I kind of realized that maybe this is something that I could do for a career, especially with on top of how much I love it. I've always been an animal guy, and this was just like the coolest thing I'd ever been a part of and still is, obviously. So it went up really fast from there. Shortly after we started investing a little bit, then I had a grandmother pass away, which was sad, very sad. But we did inherit some money from that, and that was kind of helped kickstart everything. So we kind of started getting a lot of really good opportunities, like one after the other after the other. So I think some of the first stuff we really invested in was like some basic DG stuff, but a lot of females, some hets, etc. And then with Morph Market and meeting people and everything, it took off, man. And every time I would meet somebody or make friends with them, we would discuss something and I would get a new opportunity to buy something cool that maybe wasn't on the market. And it just kind of snowballed from there. I think within the first year, we already had 100 animals, something like that.
Oh, wow.
But we really tried to keep purchases like from the same person, because when we were still in that place in Prague, because right now I'm on a little outskirt, we started to get a really big import from John's Jungle in California. And that's when I was like, okay, we don't really have any quarantine space. This is getting a bit crazy. Like, if we're going to be bringing these animals in, we need that space. So that was when we moved. And once we came here, I think we had 60 or 70 animals, and within we got that import, and then I think within 6 months that whole place was filled, almost 150 animals. So
that's a lot.
Yeah. So we have more now, but we'll get there.
And so what year was this?
So in May will be our third year.
Since
our first purchase ever. So that was in what, 2021 when that started. That's okay. When we started buying. And I think at the end of 2021, like in December, is when we had taken the new place. So, and we've been here now. So we've been here for like a year and a half. And as I told you earlier, we're already moving facilities. So
nice. So talk about the move to the new facility.
So where we're staying now is pretty expensive, especially for Czech standards. When I was talking to my dad one day, he gave me the crazy idea that he's like, man, you guys can't expand this fast and like live in the same place. So maybe you should bring it up with your landlord one day if the people move that you guys should take next door. So I thought it was a bit crazy, but we brought it up with the landlord. And at the time, it seemed like no one was going to move. There were families here. They all knew we had snakes, but they just weren't moving. And then maybe like two or three months after that happened, the lady in the middle started having some like legal battles with a divorce that she was going through. So they had to move, and we took it. So that was what allowed us to expand a bit more. So now we have, like I said, a full 4-bedroom place. It's not 100% packed, but it's pretty much filled, especially with adult racks and things. When we got Renee's collection, which we can get into a bit later, it worked out kind of perfectly because we had moved out of the room that we were living in, and that gave us one extra room in the place, and we didn't have anything to put in there. I was just going to kind of save it for a baby room or something. And then when we got the opportunity to buy Renee's collection, I was like, man, this couldn't be any more perfect. We can put all of his animals away from ours. They can breed together. We don't have to integrate their animals with ours. And that's kind of where it started. So we didn't plan on being here for more than 2 years just because it's pretty expensive. And our friend Martin from Bohemian Balls, he's a contractor slash builder. So he kind of helped convince us that maybe we should buy some land down there and live next to him. So there is a really big plot of land. It's a little bit less than 2 acres. His parents live on the land next to us, and he knew the people that were selling it. So through a long, grueling negotiation, he held our hand. We ended up getting this land. So the land doesn't have anything on it, and it's going to be a long time before we build something. But we figured that we don't need to be paying this rent anymore, and we should go live closer down there to the land. So in his company, they were reconstructing 2 apartments in this little village, like 15 kilometers from, or 8 miles, 8 miles from where the our place is. And he kind of built it with us having snakes in mind. They put more electrical outlets. They upgraded the breaker. They added a bit more insulation. So in the beginning, I was a bit skeptical. But when I went down there and I saw it, because it is 2 hours from Prague and it is in the middle of nowhere, I went down there and saw it. It's a fourth of the price for us to basically do what we're doing now. And the place we have now, I don't know if you can see it. It has this like slanted ceiling here.
Mm-hmm.
So next door, we have this in all the snake rooms also, and that stops you from putting another like 5 racks there. So that place doesn't have it. So it's almost the same size, but it's wider rooms and they're longer. So I just said, man, this is the perfect opportunity. We can go down there and it'll be a bit more self-sustainable while we wait to build our facility.
Nice, nice. Yeah, man, that sounds really exciting. And you got about what, 450 plus
animals? Yeah, we actually counted the other day for the move, and we have 467 animals.
467.
The reason that got so big was, like I mentioned, we've actually acquired 2 collections in the last year. The first one was from Renee Snake MD on Instagram. He's like kind of a famous for having a good hypo collection, really nice hypo stuff.
Okay.
And then recently, one of his good friends, a guy named Alex Zander, he had offered us his collection around the same time we got Renee's, but it didn't make much sense when I was still paying one off. And recently we had just made a deal, and now we didn't get everything from him. He still has a few animals, but we got a majority of his animals. So between those two, that added 150 to the collection. And then last year was our first season hatching babies. So we had that 150 was kind of like our core base, I guess, and then we had 22 clutches plus the collections, and yeah, that's how we got to so many animals so fast.
And so talk about your moving process and the planning process, like leading up to the move and what all goes into that, some of the challenges.
Well, it is in the middle of the season, which is like one of the worst times ever to move. The place that we're in next door, the insulation is crazy. So it's really warm over there. So even during the coldest months, I think the coldest it ever got was 76 degrees. So I think that it being so warm is, inhibiting our breeding a bit. We went and ultrasounded a bunch because we started breeding in November, and things are building, but there's nothing close to laying yet. So initially I thought maybe we would move in like May or something, and we would keep one place just in case something laid, and I would let females cycle before I move them. But once we ultrasounded and saw that everything wasn't that far along, I said, man, it's probably better if we just pack up and go as fast as we can. So the problem with that is that adults take up a lot of space, and we have, I think we have close to 200 adults that are 1,000 grams or bigger. So we don't have a van until this weekend, so we've just been using 2 cars, and the whole process is tear down 1 rack, bring it there first, make sure everything's fine with the heating. Once everything was fine, then we can come to here, tear down 1 more rack, bring 2 racks of animals, so 40 animals, and start the process over again. So today with 2 cars, we got 32 animals down there, but it took all day. It's a 2-hour drive. We had to bring the racks, take everything out of bags. Labeling is crazy again because all of our labels are on the racks and maybe they weren't the best labels. So we want to try to do it a lot more organized, because as we were buying things and as we like acquired Renee's animals, things kind of like, okay, his animals are in this room, and then I have like the old holdbacks here, and this was like an old quarantine room and everything passed quarantine, so now it's fine. So I think that now that we're moving, it'll be much easier to really like organize project by project and make sure that everything's in the same spot. Because right now, if you were to ask me to go find animals, I'd have to run between five different rooms and some things aren't labeled, etc. So that's kind of the short version of it.
Gotcha. And in that collection, like you've been picking up like some really dope stuff. Like I saw some of your stuff on IG and I think I saw some stuff on a YouTube video. So talk about the genetics you're working, the projects you're working, and kind of your mindset there.
Sure. So initially, we wanted to have a multi-recessive based collection that revolves around clown. I'm a big clown guy. But when we acquired Renee's animals, literally every animal in his collection was at least a het hypo or better. So he has everything visual hypo, really good hypo lines. And that kind of changed the direction that we thought that we would go. I think the last time I looked, 40% of our collection from that 467 animals is a het hypo or visual. So even though we still have a ton of clown stuff, we have a lot of hypo projects. One of them being hypo puzzle. We have hypo rainbow, hypo clown. That was a lot of things that we acquired from him. And then before that, hypo clown was already kind of one of the things that I liked the most. So as I said in the video that we did with Boss Dragons, we have almost every double recessive clown that's popular on the market next door. We're missing things like paint clown, but we do have sunset clown, DG clowns, hypo clown stuff. We don't have a puzzle clown, but we do have some puzzle head clown. I know it's a bit controversial, but so puzzle hypo is a big one that we acquired from Renee. That was the first thing he offered to me before we took the rest of his animals, and he's got elite planning and elite everything. So one of the big things that we acquired from him was a super chocolate hypo puzzle male, which just blew my mind already.
And yeah, that's kind of
and prior to us getting the whole collection, he had already offered me a chocolate hypo puzzle male. So I had already had that male, but I didn't have the super. So when the time came to get it, now I had him as the backup and I was able to sell it to one of my friends. So hypo is kind of the direction that we're really pushing. It seems to have a bit of a comeback in the market. A lot of people are starting to turn towards it again. So things like puzzle hypo, as I said, and hypo clown. We also have some DG clown stuff now as well, especially getting it from Alex. Hypo DG clown is really, really cool to me. So I kind of like to take the double recessives into the triple recessive game and do hypo DG clown. Hypo DG puzzle is another one we're going big on. I would really like to get hypo into sunset clown as well. We're not huge pied people. Well, I'm not. But we do have a decent amount of hypo pied stuff that comes from our friend Peter at Dutch Pythons, who also has an absolutely elite hypo collection. Not a ton of animals, but if I was to think of anybody else who had just as good of hypo animals as Renee, it would be Peter. So we have some of that. We have a little bit of DG pied. We have a little bit of clown pied. Hopefully enough so that we can still progress in it. But I think it's tough to work with. So that's why I went with the clown route.
Gotcha. What are your thoughts on the puzzle clown? You mentioned that earlier.
Well, I haven't seen a ton of it. We have 1.2 clown double head puzzle hypo. And I think I bought that before I kind of realized what it could or couldn't do. But when I did the Bomb Projects live stream, Will from Royal Canadian came on. And after the stream, him and I talked a little and he showed me maybe what he thinks has been some puzzle clown combos. So even if it's not so extreme, I think it won't be the worst idea to add another recessive to something, especially if it can change things. Puzzle does brighten things up a bit. And I think that once you start getting like, for example, if you were to make a Pompeii and it had puzzle in it, I think that there could be some cool interactions, at least subtle enough to where it makes it cool. Maybe it won't be for everybody. Maybe there's still some interactions out there that is absolutely amazing, but we haven't discovered. But it does seem like sometimes when you take two extremely strong recessives, one can overpower the other.
Yeah. Like you said, man, maybe it's something to be created that we haven't seen yet. And that's part of the fun. It's just like tinkering with the stuff. And someone's got to have the vision, have the foresight to work the project, stick to the project, tinker with it and find out what works. And then once you hit something that's crazy, then all of a sudden all eyes on you.
Sure, but it doesn't necessarily have to be eyes on you too, you know, like you might be making this puzzle clown and like the more you work with it, you start realizing all the subtle differences. It pulls the white up a bit on the sides, and maybe you love it too. So it doesn't necessarily have to only be an eye opener, but obviously that's what we want too. We want everyone to go crazy when we see things. But sometimes the hard part for me now, when we have so many animals, is finding this divide of like what makes sense and what doesn't make sense, even if I like it. Like one example that's been a tiny bit of a letdown for me is we have some candy clown stuff. Mm-hmm. And this season we hatched, I think, two visual candy clown combos, but both ended up with pastel and you just can't see anything. So I still love it. I love the candy clown that we had as a baby, but I need to work with it a bit more. But yeah, it might not be as big of an eye opener for me as I thought it was when we invested in it.
You hit what you think is a super chocolate hypo clown too, right?
Yeah, you know, after speaking to people, we do think it's a super. It might be a bit more reduced than we would like. We have two other chocolate hypo clowns in the building, and with talking to Renee and everything, it seems like it's a super. I don't want to be the guy that's going out there calling things until it proves out. I've been back and forth in my head a ton, but the more I go over there and look at him, especially as he ages, he doesn't have the same yellow tone that the regular chocolate hypo clowns have. We've repeated a pairing that can make them again. So we have chocolate hypo clown to chocolate hypo head clown. So hopefully we can hatch a few more examples. One of the guys who helps me ID thinks that maybe there's blade in the pairing and that could be a reason why it's a bit more reduced. But for now, I'm going to call him a chocolate hypo clown and a really nice one. And we'll see if he proves out.
Nice. Oh. How big is he now? Like, is he going to be ready?
He's like 200 grams. My plan was to get him ready for late season. I think that we've been so busy this year that maybe I didn't start the hatchlings as fast as I should have. We normally feed weekly. So the hatchlings, I don't breed my own rats yet. That's another big disadvantage we have of living in a ball python house, I guess you can say. At the new place, we have like a little basement cellar that's away from all the apartments, and we're going to try to breed, like, just start with some ASFs and see how it goes. So I think that when we move, I'm going to focus a bit on giving hatchlings a bit more food, because now when I order, sorry, I didn't hear the echo. Now when we buy rats, we can't really hold them because they smell so much, and we have people that are next door. So I feed everything that we have, and that's it. And if I want to feed again, I have to order again, and with 500 snakes, it's expensive, so...
Yeah, that can add up quick.
Yeah, that's the one thing that I'm really looking forward to is having our own rat breeding, not just for saving money, but for controlling what's going into our animals and, you know, being able to, this hatchling denied, and to give them another chance 2-3 days later instead of having to wait a week.
So are there a lot of rodent breeders in your area?
Well, there's a really big one that seems to supply a lot of guys in Europe. They're really good. They deliver directly to our door. It is just like a giant rat breeding warehouse in the middle of nowhere. But other than them, there's like a lot of smaller guys, and I probably wouldn't recommend buying from those guys if you're out in Czech Republic. You never know what these guys are doing to the rodents, spraying pesticides and stuff. And we already had one really bad experience 6 months ago when we were buying from some of the smaller guys because they were half the price of this big breeder. And we ended up having a snake die from it. So that was a big wake up call for us.
Yeah, that's one good thing about breeding your own rodents. You know exactly what's going on with them. Mm-hmm. Like you control all that stuff.
And you're feeding rats or you feed ASFs or
I feed ASFs.
Yeah.
Let me take that back. So I feed ASFs primarily like for like everything I'm keeping, but I mm-hmm. still do like source rodents from a guy locally to get mm-hmm. Norwegians.
Yeah, this is like the standard rat, I guess, right?
Yeah, so just like a regular rat. I do still like get rats from him like on a weekly basis to feed like some of the animals that I'm going to sell and stuff like that. But for everything that's staying in my collection or it's like a problem feeder and it won't the regular rats, I give it ASFs. And me personally, I love ASFs. Like that's my go-to food source, really. I like it. Is there like, because I know there's a lot, like in the States, there's a lot of people who go back and forth about ASFs versus rodents versus mice. Like, is it like that over in Europe or is it pretty much people just do whatever they do and don't worry about what other folks do?
It is. There's especially like we have a few customers in Poland and that has a really big divide on like there's people that are strictly ASFs and there's people that won't even buy snakes that are on ASFs. My friend Martin from Bohemia Balls, the guy that I keep referring to from down south, he feeds his whole collection on ASS, and they have quite a few animals. And when we acquired Alex's animals recently, he was breeding ASFs, and he kind of gave me a bit of a starter colony. So I kind of started experimenting with them a bit, because before I was feeding exclusively rats and mice. So one of the ideas that I had now was maybe I'll change my mousers to ASFs and keep the ones that are on rats on rats. I'm going to experiment with a few holdbacks and put them on ASFs and see if it makes any difference. But I do love the fact that they smell less. that's amazing. I also kind of like the size that they get to, because at the moment I feed, I think it's 90 to 150 grams is the like range that you buy the large ones in. So I'm never really feeding much bigger than like what a big ASF would be anyways. So I do like that. But in general, in Czech Republic, they're more expensive. My big rat breeder, the one that we buy from now, they only sell frozens. They don't sell live ASFs, or multis, they call them in the UK. Or every country out here has a different way of calling them. So you kind of have to like learn how they call them in their language. So we're going to experiment a bit with it when we move. I definitely want to get the mousers onto the ASFs. That seems like an easy no-brainer, especially with how slow things grow on mice. So maybe if we could breed ASFs, which would cover the mouser part of our purchase, and then buy the rats, I think that could be a good alternative. And then we would always have some ASFs around to give it. But there is a huge divide. There are people that won't buy them that are on them. So maybe I would only be feeding ASFs to things that are in our collection, and then anything for sale, I would just do the standard mouse to rat.
Yeah, the divide is exactly why I feed animals that are for sale. It's exactly why I feed regular rats, because
of course.
There are people that won't. There's people that won't buy them because either they can't get a hold of them, like they can't source them, and then just that don't want to feed ASFs to their snakes. So it's just varying reasons. So just to make it easier, I just feed them regular rodents.
I know a lot of people will say that sometimes a snake will go on an ASF and it's hard to get them on anything else. But my friend Martin, he doesn't have any problems with it at all. He even feeds his stuff for sale with ASFs, and he never hears about customers telling him that they don't eat. So I don't know if we're gonna switch. He's always joking. When we were down there the other day, he's like, "Oh my friend, I can't wait for you to switch to ASF so that we can order together." But I think for now I'm gonna still try the rats and the ASF mix.
Nice. I'm just curious, what does the weekly rodent bill look like for like 500 snakes?
It depends on the size that I buy. I'm trying to think. So I think the last bill was 11,000 crowns, and which is about $500 or so, $500. Okay. But then the week before, or 2 weeks before, especially like before we ultrasounded, I wanted to pump up my big female, so I ordered the one size bigger for my adults. And instead of it being $500, it was like $750. And I didn't really see a huge difference in it, except for the fact that it took everything longer to digest. Maybe it's because they're not used to getting fed that size. So for now, I've kind of gone back to that, because we're still feeding weekly and 120 gram rat. Sometimes those females take two anyways. So the $500 a week plus the rent was one of the big reasons that we decided that we were going to move down south.
That makes sense. Makes perfect sense. And so you got like a whole team working with you. So it's you, your fiance or your wife?
Well, she's my fiance. We'll call it that for now. Okay. we do actually have a full team. So one of the things that I really focused on when we started was I felt like if we didn't start, even though we might not have needed someone in the beginning, it's important to have someone trained to take care of your animals, especially if there's like an emergency in life. My family still lives in the States. So if I want to go visit, you know, we're gone for 2 or 3 weeks. So I actually met an Uber driver who ended up being really, really cool. And we talked a bit. And initially, he just gave me his number, like, "Hey, if you need some rides, we can do it off the app," so he doesn't get murdered on the percentage they take. And yeah, just we kind of started talking more. He was asking me what I did. And on his first ride over, when he dropped me off, I was like, "Man, if you want to come see them, I'm super down to show you my snakes." So I texted my fiance and I was like, "Hey, babe, like the Uber driver's coming in." And of course, she had a heart attack, but he was a really nice guy. I showed him everything. He was there for like 5 minutes, you know, mind blown. And that was it. And we continued being friends, and he gave me some rides. And there was one day where, you know how like sometimes when someone's gonna ask you for money, they kind of approach you in a certain way. So his name's Michael. Michael approached me in this way, and I thought he was gonna ask me for money, but it was the opposite. He asked me for work. He told me, "Hey man, I'm trying to become a professional diver." He's a diving instructor. But okay. They were having trouble with the company that he was working for, and he's like, "Man, if I don't make this much a month, I can't stay here anymore. So if you could help me out, that would be like amazing, and I'd be more than willing to help out." So I was like, you know, this is a good opportunity. I knew we needed someone soon. Let's try it out. So the first thing I started letting him do was I started letting him go and pick up rats for us, just to like see how reliable he is, if he's punctual, if he's on time, if he's going to show up the next day. And yeah, he just never let us down. So I showed him the process of how we clean and how the snakes work. And he learned really, really, really fast. The only problem was that we knew that he wasn't going to stay with us forever, because he was trying to become a professional diver. And the day did come when he moved away from us, but the story ends good for us. So he was in Thailand for 6 months and he came back, and I think he's only back for 2 weeks now, and he's back with us. So he's like our first really good, reliable guy. He's done, anytime something needs to get picked up from DDI in Amsterdam, which is like a 12-hour drive from us, he does that. He helps pick up when we go get collections. He helps take me to Ham, all those things. So that was amazing, because in Czech Republic, they don't honor American driver's license for whatever reason. And yeah, so after that happened, Therese's brother. So my fiance has twin brothers. And at one point, they've both worked for us at one point. But now one of them has a career in finance, and the other one is actually our full-time facility manager now. So we have Michael, the guy I was talking about. He's on and off because he's still doing some diving stuff here, and Teresa's brother, who is still in school. So we do have the four of us are doing facility work. And recently, my good friend Mike, another Michael from South Africa, his name is Jones Boys on Instagram. Him and I got really close. He's really good when it comes to IDing and pricing, and he's been in the market for a while. So he helped us out for free for a long time. And one of the things that I offered him when he was helping us for free was, I was like, "Hey man, we're going to do our first show in Nijmegen. Why don't I fly you up here as a big thank you, and we all hang out and everything?" So he came out here for a week, helped us with everything, man. Like, couldn't have been any cooler. And eventually I was like, "Dude, how would you like to get on board and be a part of the team?" So now we have my friend in South Africa who's working for us as well. Eventually I would like to get him here, but that's going to be really, really tough. But yeah, so we have five of us. Nobody's working full time. I think that both my guys are 2 days on a week. So we just kind of like separate it. So there's someone here 4 days a week. I always tell the guys who work for me, use progmorphs as a stepping stone to accomplish your dreams. You know, I know you might not want to clean snakes forever, but we offer a pretty decent hourly for Czech standards. So, you know, use us to move forward. And that's why the first guy I was talking about moved to Thailand. But thankfully, it didn't work out for him, and he's back.
That's dope, man. It's dope that you got like a nice little team dynamic going.
Man, without it, it's impossible, you know? Like, even though we might, quote-unquote, have a lower overhead if we did everything ourselves, I mean, now, Therese and I, we can go to shows, we can travel. If there's any problem, I know that someone can come over here, and everything's always taken care of well. So it's an amazing feeling.
Nice. It frees you up to have, like, a better quality of life, better work-life balance. You can focus on more strategic things. Like
it also helps them, you know, because... When we went to Nijmegen, our friend Jean-Francois, who owns Gopher Coco, is one of the big sponsors of it. And he had Billy from Mutation Creation down there. So we got to go down there for the weekend, do our show, and we got to spend the weekend with Billy and Jean-Francois. And I took both Michael from South Africa and Teresa's brother. And Teresa's brother is very involved, but maybe he wasn't so into like genetics and everything. And I think after that trip, he really the spark really went off for him, because for both of the close employees for us, I've let them buy one snake in our collection so that they can be a part of things. They can maybe build their own collection. And now we split clutch with them in our own facility. So I think that after that, he was gung-ho and just ready to be a part of it. He was telling everybody, you know, this is the family business. I'm so excited for it. So it's really cool to me to have the passion with those guys as well. So maybe they might not be the world's best breeders, but for them to appreciate the animals and to love what they're doing, I don't want them to feel like they're coming to work and slaving away. That's the last thing ever. It takes away from the care of animals. And everybody's kind of on the same page. We do things together. We go to, you know, we order food together. Now we have this big move and we have so much help. It's like people help us so much. Sometimes I'm like, why do people like us?
That's what's up, bro. Hey, we're going to take a real quick sponsor break. When we come back, I want to talk about like your production and stuff.
Sure. So I have time to run to the bathroom real quick.
Yep.
All right, cool.
Do your thing, bro.
Peace and love, family. We invite you into the heart of our serenity, Ancestral Royal Pythons. At Ancestral Royal Pythons, we're not just breeders, we're nurturers of love and growth. Each of our high-end ball pythons is a tribute to the grandeur of the natural world and our dedication to quality. Reach out today and bring one of our creations into your home. This is Ancestral Royal Pythons. Your journey begins here.
Here's to the exciting world of ebony and ivory reptiles. From unforgettable parties and events to keeping and hatching some of the dopest reptiles in the reptile hobby, we're all about education, quality, integrity, and respect. Hit us up and see how we can help make your next project a reality. Experience Ebony and Ivory Reptiles, where fascination meets fun.
Ebony and Ivory Reptiles.
Shout out to the sponsors. Appreciate you, Jason. Appreciate you, Matt. Welcome back, bro.
Perfect timing.
So how many seasons you got under your belt so far?
Say it again, seasons?
Seasons.
So we have two seasons under our belt, but our first season we only had one clutch. We had 11 pairings breeding and only one animal went, and that was probably a result of things being too warm. Last season we had 22 clutches, I think maybe 23, but half of them came from animals that we got from Renee. So when we took Renee's collection, he had gravid animals and animals building, and almost everything that was building at his house laid at ours. So that was it was a good way to get experience because, you know, as we went from one clutch to 22 pretty fast. Thankfully, we have so many good friends and other breeders in Europe that have been doing it for a long time. So people were able to hold our hand through it. Like the first egg that we cut of last season, I remember my friend was telling me, hey man, every once in a while, and it's rare, you're going to have a wrapped umbilical cord, and this is how you deal with it. And the first egg we cut of last season had a wrapped umbilical cord.
Oh, wow.
So it's just, sometimes it feels like the world throws everything at you. And yeah, so that's kind of where we are. This season, we could have upwards of 100 clutches.
Wow.
Not sure how much the move is going to affect that. So maybe we can say 50, something like that. We're going to get another ultrasounding sesh once everything's moved down there. But it seems that this one is going to be a bit of a late season for us.
So last year's clutches, were they spread out throughout the year? Or did you kind of have a whole bunch of babies around the
time? I think everything laid. I think that from those 22, I think 15 clutches laid in the first 45 or 60 days of us bringing the animals back. And then we had a few more stragglers that happened towards the end. So
how was that, like, having so many hatchings at once? Well,
we have the help, which is amazing. So that makes things much easier. It was a bit overwhelming in the beginning because there was a period – we had a few clutches that really didn't eat very well. And that was a bit stressful for me because right away I had to learn assisting, more so than I would have wanted to, I guess. But thankfully, my friend who lives down south, Martin, he comes up once a month for the reptile show here. And anytime we needed help, he would come and show me hands-on. We also had Jean-Francois from Gopher Coco come and visit us. He gave me another big hands-on lesson. And almost every time I would go to one of our friends' houses when we were at Ham or Houghton, one of my friends would be like, hey, Devin, we have a baby to assist. Come here. You know, it's time for you to learn. So I think that without the help of the other people and like the love from the community, it's not the same experience. If it was just us being big buyers and jumping into the market, I think it would be a bit of a bad experience, and I wouldn't recommend that for other people. But with all the help and You know, like there was never a time when I couldn't get help, especially if there was like a really stubborn baby that wouldn't assist or anything. So that was the big thing for us.
Yeah, community is huge, man. Having that network, having those friends, having folks that want you to succeed and want to help you and you can lean on them. That's huge. That definitely plays a lot into being successful.
Yeah, I mean, man, I really have nothing bad to say about the people that we've met in Europe. I know that you hear a lot of negativity and jealousy and fighting and stuff, I guess maybe a bit more on the North American side of the scene. But everybody that's kind of realized that maybe we have our heart in the right place and that we're passionate about it, they've like brought us under our wing. And I couldn't be any more grateful for everything that people have helped us with since we've started.
Cool. So talk about the show circuit over there. I think you mentioned two, Ham and Houghton.
Yeah.
Talk about the show circuit.
Sure. So the two big, well, there's three big main ones now, four big main ones now. The one in Verona in Italy, which we have not been to, which hopefully we can go to in May. The most famous one in Europe is Ham. That's the one that like Bob Clark and Will Banks and everything used to send animals for out there. That one's kind of the more of the circusy one that's just packed and very small. And then there's one in Houghton, which is about an hour from Amsterdam, something like that. It's in the Netherlands. And they have Snake Day, which is once a year in October. And then I think every 2 or 3 months, they have like a generalized show that can have, you know, monitors and snakes and everything else. And now the newest one that our friend Jean-Francois from Gopher Coco and Shane, I forget what he is on Instagram. I'm sorry, Shane. But they have started what's called Nijmegen Rexpo. I think they're on their third, the one that we did was the third one. The first one, Justin has been to one. Billy has been to one.
What is it called?
It's called Nijmegen. It's Nijmegen, Nijmegen, I think. Nijmegen Rexpo. It's in the city that it's called in the Netherlands. It's a bit of a smaller one so far, but it's really nice with the community. The night before, there's a big VIP dinner, and all the breeders are there and everything. So that's the only show that we've ever vended. That was our first show, which was a good way to give me a heart attack. When we started, I didn't think that we would do many shows. I wasn't a huge fan of the animal transport and stressing the animals out and everything. But with Jean-Francois and a good community, I decided that it would be the time for us to do it. So usually I'm going to shows without animals, walking around, shaking hands, doing some handovers and things. That's kind of the big thing in Europe because we don't have a FedEx system or anything to ship animals. So if you want to buy an animal from me, I can send it to your door with a courier, but it's really expensive, especially if you live far. So generally what most people do is they have four handovers a year, which would be at Ham or Houghton. So you'd have your, you know, December, March, June, and September, and those would be the times you do your handovers. So that's kind of like the generalized meeting point for the European breeders is to go to some of these shows. There's actually a show here in Prague that's a bit smaller. It's called Živa Exotika, which stands for like live exotics, I guess. And we usually go there and hang out, but lately there's been Willie from Austrian Reptiles and Ralph Sim from Ralph Reptizon, the Cosmos guy.
Cosmos guy.
Yeah, so they're coming out to the show now. So now we decided to get a table so that we can be next to them. And it's just kind of like a hangout now. And they come once a month and hang out with us. So we will be doing the Prague show once a month. Even if it's not really meant for selling animals, it's mostly just to meet people and show people and educate them and things and get an excuse to get my German and Austrian friends here to hang out.
Nice, nice. Yeah, that sounds pretty cool. Really cool, actually. So you've touched on like some of the challenges that you've had along the way, but I guess kind of like looking back over the past several years, and something we hadn't touched on yet, like what are some other challenges that you've learned a ton from?
Man, the big one that really scared me in the beginning was trying to learn about health things. And it was really tough, especially like if you want to find your information on something like ballpython.net, you're going to start having a heart attack and thinking your entire collection is sick. So one of the big turning points for us was I subscribed to both Justin and Miguel's Patreon for a while. Mm-hmm. And I remember there was once Justin posted a video with a snake with an enlarged heart. And he mentioned, I'm going to call Dr. Stahl. And that was it. So I had heard the name. And then maybe 6 months later, Miguel had posted another video on his Patreon and he mentioned the same guy's name. So I figured this guy is involved in the ball python world. Let's figure out who he is. So I started Googling him. I couldn't figure out how to spell his name. And finally, I found who he was. And his name is Dr. Scott Stahl. They're S-E-A-V-S out of Virginia. They're a big, exotic reptile vet. So I called his office one day and said, "Hi, my name is Devin. I live in Czech Republic. I've heard the name. I'm not sure, but it seems like he works with ball pythons. What's the deal?" And they came back with me and told me that Scott is really passionate about reptiles in general, especially ball pythons. And he does large collection management. And Justin's one of the guys, and Miguel as well, that he helps. So we scheduled a call with him. Not the cheapest guy on the planet, but we scheduled a call with him, and he was one of the big, big turning points for us in learning about health stuff. So we've had 5 calls with him now, and in general, the strategy would be to have 4 calls a year with him, go over problems, etc. He also gives you email correspondence, so anytime you have a problem, you can text him. He can tell you what it is. Our vets here already knew who he was because he's an author of one of the textbooks that they use. So that was a really, really, really big turning point for me, because before that, I was a nervous wreck, man. If I was in a snake room and I even heard one little wheeze or one anything, I just would lose my mind and sit in there and listen and Google and everything. So it's been really amazing to have him on our team and to help us. And when I text him, "Hey, man, the snake's wheezing. What do I do?" And he goes, "Let it shed," or whatever it is, right? Just anything that's very basic. There's been a few times that we had babies that didn't develop internally correctly and they needed surgery, and he helped our vets here with the surgery, even though it wasn't successful. We actually have a really cool, before the live ends, let's see your 3 favorite puzzle combos. That's at the end. but one of the big things for us, and it's kind of like a famous story now in Europe, is that we had an ultramel clown that we bought that didn't poop on her own. And it took me a long time to realize this because I didn't have anything tracked and I was a bit all over the place in the beginning. And I didn't realize that she didn't poop until maybe 4 or 5 months into having her, and opened her tub and she looked like a blown up balloon. I helped her out. Not going to get too graphic, but not the prettiest sight. And we started working with asking people and asking other breeders, and nobody had an answer. Everybody had a different opinion. So finally, we had taken her to the vet here. This was before we were working with Scott. And they gave her an antibiotic and a contrasting solution so that they could x-ray her. So we had brought her in on a Friday. We started her on the antibiotic. I think by Tuesday was our next appointment. And when we went in, you could see on the x-ray, on the first day, they x-rayed her and they saw that she was filled with gas mostly. So even though she was filled, most of what I was seeing was gas, which is not a good sign. It means that things are rotting inside of her. So by Tuesday, the next time that we were there, you could see that it was much better. So we figured that the antibiotic was working. So we finished the course of antibiotics. She looked a million times better. All the gas was gone, but she was still having troubles pooping. So she was still getting stuck urates, and I had to push them out and everything. So fast forward 2 or 3 months down the road of me still helping her out every once in a while. I'm not the guy that'll ever give up on an animal until they're on their deathbed. So Scott came in and he really started piecing it together. He said, "Okay, well, maybe when she was frozen, it ruined a bit of her gut bacteria. So now that we've given her antibiotics, not only have we killed the bad bacteria, but we've also killed the good bacteria." So his solution was to find another healthy animal, take poop from that animal, mix it with water, and feed it into the stomach of that snake. And the idea was that that would help restore the gut flora of that animal. So it sounded crazy, but
definitely not something I would have thought of.
We took her to the vet here. We talked to our vets and they said, "Wow, this makes perfect sense. They do this with humans for people that have Crohn's disease. Forgive me if I'm forgetting it, but it's a digestion issue." Mm-hmm. And man, sure enough, 1.5, maybe 2 months later, it started off pretty slow, but she slowly got back to normal. Now she's in my friend's collection. Breeding, she's 1500 grams, everything seems fine, hasn't had any problems at all. So that was a big wake-up call for me, because our vets here didn't know, none of my, even my friends who've been doing it for 20 years never really knew, and Scott figured it out in a 20-minute phone call. So that's when I knew that he was kind of the truth. So now anytime I had any question or anything that was like bothering me, how does this work? How does this work? Is bacteria something I need to be scared of? Do we need to disinfect our hands after every animal? Blah, blah, blah. So that now I think is a year that we're working with him, and I can sleep well. Anytime there's a problem, he'll tell me like, hey man, this isn't anything to worry about. It'll work out on its own. And yeah, also very grateful for that guy.
That's wild, bro. The comments going crazy too. Everybody saying that's wild. That's wild. Yeah. That's probably the most unique like snake health story that's ever been told on the show.
Man, I couldn't believe it. And now our vets here, they're using this treatment when they see that snakes are having digestion issues. Because a lot of times there's people that use metronidazole, I think is what it's called. it's also for deworming, but it can also help store gut bacteria. And for me, I would rather use a natural solution before I'm putting any type of chemicals or any medicine or anything in an animal, you know? So even though it can help them, I don't necessarily think these animals were meant to take these medicines, right? So for me, it's nice to have this guy, man. Without Scott, I would never be able to have the amount of animals that we have.
Yeah, that's wild, man. That's crazy, 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 crazy.
Everybody loves this story, man. It's such a cool story.
Yeah, I would definitely retell that story myself.
Man. Yeah, dude, it's great because I've even heard that there's people in Europe retelling that story. So I had to tell you.
Right, so moving away from what did you say?
Sorry, no, I was just laughing.
Oh, okay. I thought somebody said something crazy in the comments.
Yeah, as the Beast Morse in the chat says, that some people do use metronidazole to get animals back on food. So,
okay. So let's talk about your favorite projects and like, what do you think about like the future of projects? Like, what projects most excite you that you're ready to work on? And then what do you think about like the future of those projects?
Well, as I said earlier, it's going to be a lot of hypo stuff here. So, Hypo Clown is probably still my favorite project. Our first investment animal that we ever bought was a special hypo clown female. And it was they didn't deliver, they didn't offer discounts, you know, they wanted it paid in cash. So it was not the easiest animal to get, but I kind of played by their rules to get her because she was so gorgeous. So that was a big stepping stone for me. And then from Ralph Reptizan, we ended up getting a GHI hypo clown male. So those are the first two things that really blew my mind. And so now that we have all the puzzles, all the hypo stuff with Renee, we're kind of able to go back and forth with it. I think that hypo is maybe a bit underutilized in the industry. When we started, I remember going to Snake Day and they were like, I think people had female hypos on the table for like 25 euros. So now that guys like Renee was a big guy who helped push hypo, he has so many pretty combos on Instagram and everything. So I really want to continue going down into the hypo clown path. It does really well with both light and dark genes. One of the things I was talking to Renee about the other night was putting lace into hypo clown because I also really like hypo DG clown. So I'm thinking maybe the white lace hypo clown could kind of have that DG hypo clown vibe, but it's going to be hard to say because sometimes the hypo can really pull the oranges and things out of it. So I'm not exactly sure what that's going to look like. Hypo puzzle for me is a huge one now, especially since we have so many of those combos. We have a dark night hypo puzzle, which is a chocolate spot nose hypo puzzle. And that's just, I think that's my fiance's favorite animal, and it just blew me away, man. This is such a cool, cool, cool snake. So I think, you know, there's a lot of hypo lines out there, I guess you can say, and the knot knife stuff can kind of turn you off of that. But when you see really, really nice hypo stuff, like I don't know if recently on our story we posted a black pastel hypo head puzzle, and for it just being a black pastel hypo, I'm sure the head helps. It's just absolutely phenomenal. You know, we have a black pastel DG as well, and it's a great animal too, but it doesn't seem to have the same like spectrum of colors that hypo has. So last year, we got a hypo DG head clown male. That was a big import that we got from Florida. So he's been probably the main breeder of the non-Renee animals. So I am really pushing the hypo DG clown on almost everything that he's touching. I think that I really like the darker stuff, and especially now Justin put out a video recently of his DG Clown stuff, like with some blackhead, I think it was like some blackhead stuff in there, and it's unbelievable the contrast that it makes. So I tend to go down the darker side of things, and that's kind of the direction that we've had. Even though I was talking that Special Hypo Clown's kind of the opposite of dark, I think that you can make a lot of really good contrast and hypo. You can make the same combo. You can make the same hypo clown combo, and I think you'll have a lot of different variations of it, especially when one gene is more overpowering than another. So that's kind of my favorite for that. You know, as I said, I don't like pied very much, but my friend Peter from Dutch Pythons has the coolest hypo pied stuff I've ever seen. He just made a Suma yellow belly hypo pied that I didn't think would be an animal that I would like, and it's just absolutely crazy. So that's also something that I think is really cool. As weird as it sounds, I like hypo pied.
Is it high white, low white, mid white?
Sorry, say it again. It's a high white, yeah. I think it only has 15% pattern. They're just two little gray dark patches. I'll try to send you guys I'll post a picture of it or something later.
Okay.
Yeah, that one's amazing. But as I was saying, I like hypo pied and I like the DG pied stuff a lot. Sorry, I don't know where my camera is. I like the hypo pied stuff a lot. And I like the DG pied stuff a lot. But for me, they're both still better than the hypo DG pied. I haven't seen enough of it yet, but that one seems to fight a bit with it. But I'm sure that they're just not the right combo that I've seen. So those are the things that we're really focusing on. I'm really interested to see what things like Redhead would do in Hypo Clown and Hypo DG Clown, and even just in DG Clown. We were a bit weak on the DG Clown side, but recently when we got to the Alex Zander's animals, I think that came with a lot of DG Clown stuff and Clownhead DG breeders and things. So hopefully this year we can make something like some black pastel DG Clownhead hypos. We're still trying to hit the Special Hypo Clownhead DG. We have two females that give us the chance at making the triple hypo DG clown this year.
Nice.
And then a new one that I've maybe been changing my opinion on a bit, especially since we got Alex's animals, is the Xanthic stuff. So in the beginning, I wasn't a huge fan of Xanthic, especially because there's so many different variations of it. Some Xanthic clowns look amazing and some Xanthic clowns look exactly the same as a regular clown. But now that everybody's really chasing this Xanthic DG clown, that was a big acquisition from us. So the Alex Zander collection that we have now, that was his biggest project. It's TSK DG clown, so it's not VPI, but TSK. Okay. So now we've kind of stumbled upon this project, and we have some chances at making TSK DG clowns this year. So. Right. And not only that, but in the collection, we have some Xanthic DGs, which are really cool. And we also have an Xanthic Hypo that looks awesome. So these things kind of are changing my mind on things. And maybe we would start even an Xanthic Hypo DG project, which seems like it could be quite unique.
Nice, nice. In terms of recessives, are there any recessives that you don't have in your collection right now that you kind of got your eye on?
Zebra, yeah, that's the one that we don't have at the moment. I talked to Mike Rattlesnacks. I'm not sure if that's still his name, from the UK a bit. And he's waiting for me to hatch him a chocolate hypo puzzle, and maybe we would trade him for some zebra. But other than that, we have almost every recessive that I would like. Obviously, we don't have like Tornado or anything that's, you know, new. Paint is another one that I kind of have my eye on. The paint clowns look amazing, but then I haven't seen too many paint combos that maybe warrant me into, you know, investing in a bunch of paint yet. So currently I think that we have almost every recessive that we would like. We have Monarch, we have Ultramel, we have Rainbow, we have basically all the lines of albino now. That's one that I'm going to have to think of in the future if we continue with, because I do like Lav Albino, but with us being really focused on the multi-recessive projects, it's kind of hard to go into that quadruple recessive with Lav. You can do like Lav Clown Pied. Maybe you could add Sunset, but it for me, I can't put hypo on it. So that's a big one for me.
What about incomplete dominance? Anything that you don't currently have that you want to get into?
What do we have? What do we not have? Well, we don't have a Cosmos. That's one that we don't have. That's a big one that in the future I'll keep my eyes on. Other than that, we have most of the popular codoms that are on the market. We recently just got a redhead clown male, and we already have some redhead head clown females. What else? I'm trying to think codom-wise. It's hard for me to think off the top of my head, but we have almost everything that I would like in codom. There's the most recent one that I was really interested in was Trojan, and we have a super Trojan head hypo from Justin now.
Okay, nice. Nice. What about like in terms of like non-popular incomplete dominant genes? Like, are there any that you're kind of working with that are?
We have a gene called Hitari.
Hitari, okay.
Yeah, we have Hitari, and this year our friend Chris Wompy Balls made some Hitari head clowns. So we're making a trade / breeder loan, and we're gonna get four of those. So we'll have four Hitari head clown females. That has a super called Atari, and I've only ever seen a few pictures of it. So that's a really cool one that could be kind of unique. I'm trying to think of any of the smaller ones. We have a kind of a dinkerish in our collection that I was considering calling Jolt, but it seems that somebody else has already taken that name.
I was just about to ask that.
Yeah, so I think that somebody else has that, so I'm not sure what I would call it yet. But one of my friends from Austria, I think he's SC Reptiles. He was one of the guys that we bought some stuff from in the beginning. And as I learned more, I noticed, I said, hey, man, you got this yellow gene in everything. It's like, it looks like it's the world's best pastel. It's almost like a banana yellow in these animals. So I told him, like, man, you know you have this floating around. And he said, yeah, I know. We've never proved it. It seems to be in all of our animals, yada, yada, yada. And maybe like 6 months later, he had had a really big order from somebody that was supposed to take, you know, 15 or 16 animals, and he got stood up at the gas station where they were supposed to hand over. The guy didn't show up, didn't have money or anything. So when he told me, he was like, hey, man, this is a disaster, you know. My wife and I were expecting some of this money for our bills. He said, how about this? If you want the project, I'll give you every animal that we have in it. You don't have to pay the price of the dinker. You can just pay the price of what the animal is, pay me over time, and let's see what happens. So I said, man, I love it. Seems like a good risk, and let's take it. So now we have like 25 animals that have this gene. I'll call it Jolt for now, but I'm probably going to rename it. So that's kind of cool, but I haven't proved it yet, and we have to breed it this year. What else is there that's there? We have Peach. We also have Peach clowns.
Peach, that's okay.
So we have Peach. One of them, we have 1.1. They both look really different, so it's hard to say what they are. They're not from Justin. So maybe that could be cool as well. But what else? I guess Rainbow. That's not an incomplete. That's a recessive. Yeah, I'm not so... I think that's it as far as the, like, unheard of ones.
Gotcha. Okay. So that's dope. So seems like even though you've only been in it for like a few years, like you've had a lot of experiences, like you've acquired collections. I mean, you've been to the show, you've gone through like with Dr. Stalling, like you learned like this groundbreaking thing about like how to get your snake healthy and stuff like that. So you've learned a lot over these past several years. So talk about some of the keys to success in the ball python industry from what you know now.
So from what I know now, when I look back on it, a big one for us are relations. You know, some people stay in their own lane a bit more and other people network a bit. But as I was saying earlier, if we really didn't have these guys around us, not only would we not have these really cool animals, but we also wouldn't have the confidence to kind of go into unknown waters, you know, because even with Scott on the team, it's still nice to have your friends who have been doing it for 20 years help a lot. So that's a big one for me. I think that especially with how much variance there is in breeding and odds and everything, that it's very important that you stay close, especially if they're people you like, with people that are on the same projects. Because like Peter from Dutch Pythons, he also does rainbow hypo and puzzle hypo stuff. And I know that if I miss a combo and he makes it, then we'll share it, right? Or he'll sell it to me or whatever. So that's a big one for us. Another one is patience. Even though we really went through it fast, I always tell my friends or like customers or people that were helping, really try to plan your purchases. One of the big mistakes that we made was you know, I knew I wanted blackhead, so I would go and buy a butter blackhead clown female, but I wouldn't have a goal with, like, what I want to do with her. I have her, and I know that I'm going to breed her and do whatever, but I didn't have the breeding plan in my head of, like, oh, I need a blackhead female to make this combo. So I think that try not to get on this FOMO train of, like, thinking that the hype is going to pass you by and everything, because as you can see, the market cycles, and especially now that we're in a buyer's market. So really try to – excuse me, I have to – sorry. So really try to figure out what you want in your projects. Don't think that you have to buy an animal because it's there and you're not going to find another one if it has a gene in it you don't like, you know? Like if there's that the new quad recessive and it has pastel in it, it's not, and you don't want pastel in it, well, wait until you get something better, because that just creates this cycle of you needing extra animals to sell, and now instead of having a 1 in 2 chance of making the male without pastel, you have a 1 in 4 chance because the other one's gonna have pastel in it. So that's a big one for me. Really get your husbandry down. Every place that you're in is gonna be different. Like the first place that we are in has different insulation than the next place. That place holds humidity different than the other one. So really dial in that husbandry, however you're doing it. There's many different ways. You could talk about it for hours, but really figure out your environment. One of the things that took me a while to learn is that we have relatively brutal winters here. And anytime the temperature outside is below 32 degrees, it's very important that the tubs are a bit more humid than normal. Because for whatever reason, the dew point outside is a bit lower. And that's when things will start having bad sheds, unless you're really on top of it. So, like, these are the things that, regardless if someone tells you, you do need to have experience, right? Like I was explaining earlier, the first time I had to do a 2-channel thermostat with 10-level rack, I knew how it worked, but I kept having to envision in my head, okay, levels 1 through 5 are on channel 1, and then 6 through 10 are on channel 2, and then figuring out, like, do I put the probe on the first level or do I put the probe on the 5th level? And then sitting there with your heat gun and being like, this level's 90 degrees and this level's 86 degrees. So these are all things that even if you're going fast or slow, you just have to have hands-on experience, right? Same with assist feeding. You want to assist feed, you got to do it many times, have someone show it to you. The first time you put that mouse in the snake's mouth, it's not just going to wrap it and, you know, go down its throat. So this is that those are all things that I think are important for our learning journey and to continue to move forward. Because, like, now that we're moving to a new facility, it has different insulation. The rooms are different. The airflow is going to be different. The floor might be colder in this place than it is in the other place. Really try to stay on top of checking things. Like, buy that infrared heat gun. That's the biggest thing that I could – that my number one – friend is figuring things of how warm it is, you know, is you never know if that heat mat is at 95 degrees, a few degrees too hot, unless you have that heat gun. So, like, these are things that I think just take time, and you kind of have to have this little, like, I call it a responsibility clock in your head. You know, now that we have so many animals, I know that if we're supposed to be cleaning every 5 to 7 days and maybe we're not cleaning on the 8th day, it's like tick, tick, tick. You really got to make sure that those animals are fine. It's your responsibility, and I just can't sleep until it's there. I hope I didn't rant too much on
that. Oh, no, that was good. That was real good. I did have a follow-up question, though. It's kind of the opposite of that. And so aside from, like, doing the opposite of all those good things that you just said, what are some pitfalls to avoid? And it doesn't necessarily have to be something you've done, but maybe something you've witnessed, someone else do or heard about, something like that. What would you say some things that can avoid, that can, like, lead you down, like, a bad path in this industry?
Being a bit too much of a bargain hunter can bite you in the ass. And not because saving money is a bad thing, but because there are still people out there that are money oriented only and don't really care what they sell you. So I think that it's very important that when you've kind of found a few breeders that you like to buy from that have healthy animals and things, to kind of stay in that realm. Maybe like a year into us doing it, and we had bought from a few different people, I kind of realized, like, hey man, this is not.
I think we just lost him real quick.
Good.
There you go.
It's, yeah, all good. We're still here.
Yeah, you're good now. It dropped off for a second, real quick.
No problem. I was just saying that, it's very important that you really kind of find that group of people that you want to buy from. And don't necessarily just try to find the best deal, because, man, getting for me, having a sick animal, regardless if it's a virus or whatever, is I don't sleep well. I don't enjoy the process of it. There's only so many things that we can do as a breeder to help them out. You know, like if you take an animal to a vet, they can either give it surgery or give you an antibiotic. Other than that, it's mostly letting the animal deal with it on their own. So I think that it's very important that you try to avoid that as much as possible. The stress of dealing with sick animal or something that worries you could sit as paranoia in your head for months. Even if you only had one animal that came down with something, I mean, at least with me, it just pulls me into like, oh, I did this and I touched that and blah, blah, blah. So I think that's very, very important for the bad things. What else? I think that investing in good quality equipment is a huge thing, because, you know, buying the wrong thermostat or going cheap with something, you have the risk of fires, you have the risk of thermostats failing, and anything that can cause death is not worth a dollar to me. So I would rather spend the extra money and ensure that I know that everything's fine. I'm even a little uncomfortable here. We had to bring those animals down south, and normally I have them next door. So after this call, I'll go check everything is fine and go to sleep. So I think that anything that helps you sleep at night and makes your animals happy is 100%. I'm never the guy that tries to cut a corner when it comes to animal health.
That makes perfect sense. That makes perfect sense, bro. So before we let you get out of here for the rest of your night, and enjoy the rest of your night, because I know it's getting late there and you got like a lot of stuff to do this weekend with moving the collection and all. First off, I really appreciate you taking the time. I know when we started the show, it was 2 a.m. there, so it's probably inching up on 3:30 a.m. there. So yeah, really appreciate you taking the time on this busy week. But is there anything that you want to let the listeners know to be on the lookout for from Prague Moors, things of that nature?
Well, we're very friendly. If anybody ever wants to talk, we are full-time snakes now, so feel free to message us on Prague Moors anytime. There's no bad question. I'm definitely down to share what I've learned through Scott with health and things. We've helped a few people with some problems and stuff. I don't want to say that we're experts, but we do have a very good team behind us. Look out for a lot of hypo stuff this year. We're really trying to step up our social media game. We have a Czech Patreon. It's not Patreon, it's called Hero Hero. So we are starting the educational side and trying to help the Czech market, making videos and things. We also did start a YouTube channel, so we are going to be trying to up our media game. But other than that, just want to say that, like, this is one of the coolest things we've ever done. The passion is the number one thing for us. And regardless of sales and making everything, I always joked around with my fiance that if ball pythons were illegal, we'd have the coolest collections of snakes next door either way. So love what you do. Don't feel afraid to reach out to us. And yeah, hope everybody enjoyed my time here and I didn't ramble too much.
No, man, you did an amazing job. Amazing job. I really appreciate you taking the time again. I know it's late and whatnot, but you did an amazing job. You had some wonderful stories, man. And so definitely going to be following you and keeping up with what you're doing. I didn't mention this earlier, but like hypo is probably like hands down like my favorite gene. Like sometimes I go back and forth, but like I really love hypo and I really love the hypo clown project. I love the hypo DG clown project. So I definitely be keeping an eye out for what you're producing. We actually have a shot at some super chocolate hypo clowns this year and cool. Dark Knight hypo clowns this year. So definitely be looking out for what y'all produce and seeing like what you find out with that mail too, because I may have to like compare some notes.
So look, let's stay in contact. The last thing I'll say is that if anybody ever wants a video tour, I know we live far, especially you, Mike. I have to give you one either way. Let's get on call one day. If anybody wants to talk, I'd love to show animals to people. That's one of my favorite things to do. So okay, maybe in a few days when we're done moving, then I can show you everything. But anybody here in the chat, Jaffe's here. He's already seen some of our animals. But if anybody wants to look at some stuff, talk snakes, I'd love to show you guys what we have. We have tons of hidden gems next door, tons of them.
For sure. Absolutely, man. Appreciate it. Appreciate it. And I appreciate everybody in the chat, too. Really appreciate all the support, man. Y'all coming out, showing love each and every week. This episode is going to be up on the audio only podcast platforms in just a few minutes here after the show. We're going to upload that. And then y'all make sure y'all come check us out next week. I got the homie Malacio from Wiz Constrictors. He's going to be a special co-host with me. We got Bob's Ball Shed. So we got Bob Vu and Josh Jackie coming on. So you make sure y'all check that out. It's going to be a real dope, fun show. So definitely come check that out. Again, man, can you hang back for a second?
Yeah, of course.
Okay. Everybody else, thank y'all. For be blessed. Peace.
Yo, thanks, everybody. Appreciate it.
Yes, sir.